B2. Number 21A.
This idea is the following. We live in the cybernetic age. Cybernetics, therefore, as shown in the human, must be a counterfeit of an idea existing in being. We couldn't have cybernetics in the human if there would not be the idea of cybernetic in a divine way. So that today we are beginning to see that there must be a level of consciousness which we could describe as divine cybernetics. Now, that divine cybernetics has evolved quite naturally out of this dimensional consciousness, because the cybernetic consciousness, so to say, can be depicted as this dimensional consciousness in operation. The moment that those dimensional levels are seen in a constant revolving flow, in that measure we begin to see the groundwork of cybernetics. You know that cybernetics, let me take it in its fundamental aspect, has four offices. Cybernetics come from cybernetes, from the Greek, which means the steer men in a ship. It comes from shipping. And so they have taken this word because in the, shipping, can you say? In navigation, you have always four officers at work. Namely, a captain who defines where he wants to go, where he is, where he wants to go. You have the navigator who has to find out the way and the plan, how to go. The navigator, when he has made the plan, gives orders to the steersman, who has now to steer according to the navigator's plan, which the captain has given, to arrive there. And fourth, in order to arrive there, you always need rowers, you need a force, you need a motivating power to get there. Now, in cybernetics, they always have these four offices. Namely, first, the captain, or we could call it the word, which would always show the aim to arrive at, because it is from mind to love. Then we have the navigator as the Christ. The Christ is always that which now puts that whole purpose into a plane and leads and guides this in this plane. We have always the steersman as Christianity, namely that everything in being must fall in line with that Christ plane. And we have the force of it, namely understanding, science. Science is the biggest power, the biggest motivating power. In cybernetical terms, therefore, every cybernetic problem is always shown in a model. That's the great point of cybernetics, that they can take anything and put it into a model. And the model is always this, that you have an input of information, and that input as a black box, or they also call it process, that out of that black box of process comes the output, namely the result of the input that has been transformed, and you have an output, but that output usually is not right. It can be right, but needs not to be right, and therefore has a constant feedback back to the input. So can you see these four offices of every cybernetic system? Input one, the word, namely that you give in the whole information. The word is the whole information. It says, what is God? The whole information in divine sign. We have the mystery of Christ, that's the black box, the mystery of Christ, the process, namely it's always that, it was always long ago, long that mystery, how the word of God through the Christ could work wonders and had an output. Christianity. Well, Christianity was the output. What did Mrs. Eddy say about Christianity? The outcome of the Christ life. Can you see? It's always repeats and repeats. They are so simple, you know. So just a matter to get tuned in one's spiritual ear. And that output, that's the difference now between an automat, do you call it an automat? Automatic machine, where the output is fixed. Something is thrown out of that output and there you have it. If we go on and have a Coca-Cola out of an automat, you say?
A machine?
Well, you put in, you see, your pennies, and then in the black box something happens, and the Coca-Cola is thrown out, and that's finished. You can't change it anymore. That's not the cybernetic system. That's just an automatic machine. What makes an automatic machine to a cybernetic system is that it has a feedback, that it says this output is either right or wrong, but in any case it goes back and gives new information, higher information to input. Somebody has said quite rightly the other day when we were doing Word Christ Christianity, said, isn't it like a spiral going up and up and up? You see, so that the fourth side is always coming back to the Word and giving it more inspiration, giving more information. We have in cybernetics two ways of feedback, two different feedbacks. Either it is a positive feedback or it is a negative feedback. That's how they call it. What does it mean? Let's, for instance, take here you have, say, a submarine. And the submarine has these torpedoes. And in the torpedoes, say, in it is a cybernetic system, a computer or something like that, a cybernetic system. You let that go against the target. And if that torpedo goes to the right place, it constantly gets back, while it is on the way, it constantly gets back from the target the information, yes, you are on the right track, yes, you are on the right track. That's positive feedback. It comes from the target, has a feedback information which tells you are right or you are wrong. If you are right, all right, it goes on and on and on. That's the positive feedback. If the torpedo does deviate, not to the target, it gets a negative feedback which says, you are a bit wrong. You are so and so many degrees wrong. And so feeds back an information back into the input and says, you must change that input a little bit. And so the next information comes back, it's still not right. See, changed a little bit, and again negative feedback, and then perhaps says, now you have done too much, go a little bit back. So that's the negative feedback, which is adjusting. That's called negative feedback. So here I have given you the fundamentals, so to say, of a cybernetic system which acts in your body, which acts in a computer, which acts in a bee, which acts anywhere. Everything in being has the same cybernetic model within itself. Wherever there is a self-organizing system, not just system, a self-organizing system, that's just a self-organizing, that's a very important point, that it is self-organizing system. that it says that it is not the system which we have to organize. In that slot machine where you take out your Coca-Cola, that's not self-organized. It's organized by men, you see. It's organized so that every time just has to do what has been foreseen. Now, another point is in such a self-organizing system that it has this eternal circuit. This, you see, input, process, output, feedback, that it is a self-rotating, self-steering, self-regulating, or a self-organizing system. What is the aim of such a cybernetic system? A cybernetic system, say, of a body. You know, everything works in us as many cybernetic systems. As I told you once before, I think you feel hungry. Therefore, the cybernetic system in us begins to work, and you say, oh, I have to give a new input, I have to eat something. And in the measure I eat something, the process that in the black box something happens in the whole body, and suddenly as an output comes out, the message, now that's enough, don't eat anymore, you see. Or it says, still a little more, so I have your feedback and says, give a little more. Until it comes to that state where it says, this is harmonious. This is bringing the whole system back to normal. And that is called in cybernetic, that state of normality, that state of being at ease and, of normality, of harmony, is called homeostasis. Can you read that? You know homeopathy? You know homeopathy? Homeo means self. Homeopathy is saying you heal by the same drug, you see. That which has made you sick, you take as a remedy, the same. Homeo, the same. And stasis is from static, status. It's two words. Homeostasis from the Greek, homeo, the same, and stasis, the same state. You see. Therefore, it means to come back to the normal state, to the healthy state. So the whole cybernetic system, as you have it here, input, process, output, feedback, has as its aim to bring about a homeostasis. Your thermostat, you have a top, you see, is doing what? It wants to bring out the homeostasis of your temperature, so that it is always, I don't know, 60 or so degree. That's the homeostasis. But this is not all. It also begins to see that this would be the aim. Then nothing would be, there would be no progress in the world. And that therefore this homeostasis must have even a higher sense of homeostasis, namely, of having a healthy flow, you see. You don't want to always be 20 years old and have a cybernator in oneself that always keeps the body 20 years, or let's say 5 years, see. You want that there is a flow, something happening going forward, but yet always in a homeostatic sense, always natural, normal. So that we grow normally, that we proceed in perfection, that we proceed always adapted to the situation, always healthy, you see. And this, therefore, this homeostasis is only a regulating at the moment, but the long term of it is not a homeostasis, but a homeostasis. Homeo, and then raise it. This is again two words from the Greek. Homeo again, that's self-sameness, so to say, and raise comes from flow, the river that flow. Pantarai. Do you know that from that important you say panterai from the Greek. Well, it's a very well-known expression from one of the Greek philosophers who said everything moves. Panta, all, panta means all, panta, rei, everything is in motion. Rei, reise. So that this homeostasis is not a static stasis, a static state, but a harmonious state that is constantly evolving and evolving and evolving, which has a flow, you see. Now, if we look at this, then we have more or less the main factors of a cybernetic system. Now, this is exactly what we had before of our chart. Not a pity. Can I? You would recognize if I put here the chart. What it means, you see, if we have the word Christ, Christianity, and science, it means first that whole system is here. The word is the input. The Christ is the Christ mystery, the black box, the process of that input, which makes that input work and transform itself until it spits out the output, the outcome of the Christ idea, is Christianity, and then science, which informs you constantly about, as the feedback, what is still missing in the world, how much the world is not complete. And so you have this here, you see, as one angle of the cybernetic system. And you have this on every level, that this is the spiral, you see, going up, always input, process, output, feedback to a higher word, to a higher input, process, output, feedback to a higher sense of the word. You see, that's the system here. And it is self-organizing. We don't have to do a thing about it. We have seen, let's accept it. Being is self-operative. On the highest level, on principle, we said there is just principle going on. And therefore, principle is self-operative. So that we begin to see in being, we have that wonderful cybernetic system which is working by itself. Is working by itself. But it is not only self-organizing, it has the positive and negative feedback. Where are they? What have we seen? On the level of Christian science, we have seen, on the level of Christian science, all errors are being corrected. The level of Christian science has the office of correcting what is wrong, and therefore give us the information what is wrong, and put it straight. So that we have in absolute Christian science the positive feedback which says principle has an idea and that idea is always right and brings forth all that the truth. They are truth. Therefore, we have positive feedback. And so on the level of divine science, we feel that this is therefore bringing about this homeostasis, that being in rest, where everything is harmonious, where everything is fine, where there is no more latent error, no more concrete error, but in divine science, where error is excluded, and therefore we have gained the normal state of things. But there is even more, there is a homoerese, because it says this is not happening once, and it's not happening just for one situation, but it's on the highest level of science going on and on and on, brings you on and on and on. Just we have seen for the last 40 years how an idea once seen as linear has brought us up to the functional, to the operational, to the operational, then to the structural, then to the dimensional, then to the cybernetic idea. We've seen. And so, all the important elements which belong to a cybernetic system are really operating in what we have seen as a dimensional consciousness. Therefore, We do not need to stay in the dimensional consciousness just by looking at it and seeing it, what it means, but by seeing that it operates by it. Today I want to touch on the last so-called level of consciousness which we have been considering, namely we have started with the atomistic thinking, then the linear, the functional, the operational, the structural, then the dimensional, and yesterday quickly the cybernetical. And now I want to go to the last one, namely to the what we would call the comprehensivist view, or to oneness, to the consciousness of oneness. So to say, as the climax of that whole development. Now, this comprehensivist view, which takes in always the whole as one and as infinite, is naturally a subject which has been in the minds of Christian Science for a long time. I only have to remember that perhaps one of the outstanding exponents of this oneness school was Bicknell Young. He spent, so to say, his life of showing that being is one. But naturally, this oneness is not just a simplistic sense of oneness, but it is a compound sense of oneness. And so I want to introduce that subject of oneness through the Bible first, as it came along, and then climax it with a textbook. What is the development that has led up to that oneness? You know, you may have felt that I like always to give the historical development of something, because I always feel that if one knows from where one has been coming, one has a much better perspective of where one is at the moment. So, if we start with the Bible, we can see, as in the Pentateuch, namely in the space there, or in that place where we find in the Bible at the beginning, really the word sense, that what the Bible taught there in respect to oneness was really only one God, or monotheism. Their main concern was to show to the Israelites that there is only one God. Hear, O Israel, there is one God. All the commandments were turning round about that sense that there is one God, not many gods. And so, at the beginning of the Bible, we only first get the sense that there is only one God or principle. It was a terrific struggle for monotheism, and so there was constantly what I would call the presentation of new covenants which God would make with Israel, if Israel would acknowledge God as the only God. And already by seeing that there were these covenants being made, one can see that their sense of oneness was not a very large sense of oneness. Namely, that they still accepted one God, and next to it, Israel, or men. So that men and God were still separated, and not one. The focal point was just one God, to worship one God. And so Israel stood always face to face with God, which means that there were two faces. There were not one. And so for them that one God was hidden away, be it on Mount Sinai or on Horeb, hidden away. He was not seen, he was not known, he was hidden away in the tabernacle, Afterwards, he was hidden away in the holiest of holies. Nobody was allowed to come anywhere near. There was a veil of separation between the holiest of holiest and the holy place, so that in no way Israel would be one with God. So you can see that world sense, which is looking up to God, is not yet giving us there the true sense of oneness. So just by saying we have one God and only one God, we haven't found oneness in its purest and highest sense. We only have started really with the principle of being and said there is only one God, one principle of being. But Israel was away from God. God dwelt far away, hidden away, unseen, somewhere on Mount Horeb. Then little by little, with the prophetic age, one gets a feel in the Bible that this duality between Israel and God is slowly being broken down, and that one gets a feeling that more and more there is also some kind of oneness between God and man. Here with the prophets, right, starting, say, with Judges, all the judges that were risen up, they started and saying, the Spirit of the Lord came upon me, and would prophesy, and would lead, and lead the war, and so on. It was always that sense. Now God, who somehow was so much hidden away, is coming nearer and nearer to man, so that the Spirit of God came upon me. The prophets were the major prophets and the minor prophets. They were no more teaching Israel commandments and how to behave and what to do. The only thing they only taught them what they should do is to return to the Lord. It's quite interesting when one reads all the prophets through and asks, what does God demand of Israel? It is usually the only one thing: return to the Lord. It isn't like in the books of Moses that God gave to Israel all sorts of commandments and rules and laws, what they should do and what they shouldn't do, and so on. Here, when we come further in that Christ section of the Bible on the prophets, it is constantly a sense that Israel should draw nearer and nearer to God himself, so as to be one with God. Return to the Lord. Then the New Testament breaks in, and Jesus came along, and he brought a much more intimate relation between God and man, because there it became so intimate that it began to coincide in some way. Namely, in the New Testament is always that God is working within you. So the distance between God and man fell step by step, and the New Testament would show that the Lord God, that it is God that is working within you. The kingdom of God is within you. I'm in you and you in me, and so on. Can you see that here that term in becomes very important? It begins to show that intimate relationship between Father and Son. Jesus was calling his God Father, all turned around the Son, and so that intimate relationship was being brought forward and presented to the disciples as Father-Son relationship. But still, that was not yet a true oneness, because when we read New Testament, we see, especially when we read Paul, he constantly wars against. He says, well, our warfare is not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against the powers and so on. And you could see that whole Christianity had not found a pure, complete oneness, though they felt that God is living in them. They were living in a universe which was hostile.